Welcome to Dollars and Cents, creating your fulfilled life with Nicole Romito from Private Vista. In this podcast, we draw from years of experience as well as guest specialists to help you create the life you imagine. Join us in this journey as we enlighten and empower you to align your lifestyle to help you achieve your goals with a clear picture of your future. Now, let's get to the show.
Hello and welcome to Dollars and Cents with your host, Nicole Romito. Nicole, good to be back with you. I'm excited about this because this is part two of a very interesting conversation on executive compensation. So I'm looking forward to continuing, as it were.
Yeah, I am too. So hopefully, I'm hoping all our listeners already listened to the first part of this. But the good news is, if you haven't had a chance, you can go back to whatever platform you listen to our podcast on and either listen to that first, or you can certainly circle back with that, because it is a nice two-part series that I have with one of my partners, Matt Parenti. Mm-hmm. So welcome back, Matt.
Hey, Nicole. Good to be back.
We're going to continue our conversation on all things executive compensation. I will, for our listeners, if you didn't have a chance to listen to episode one, I'll just give you a little brief background on Matt. As I mentioned, he's one of my partners and he's a lead advisor. So I really enjoy working with him at our fabulous company, Private Vista. No surprise, you know, he has a handful of degrees and designations, proud graduate of the University of Illinois, majored in financial planning, minor in international studies. That wasn't enough for him. So he also has a master's of finance from Notre Dame. And then, of course, as all advisors do or are working on, we all have our certified financial planner designation. Matt really is, obviously, with his education and background, is a numbers guy, but really where I know where he excels and what brings him joy is the people side of the business. So working with his clients to make sure that they are on track and putting all the things together so they're achieving their Private Vista. And he's also just a really integral part of our management team on coaching and helping our next generation grow so that the company continues on. So with that, Matt, I know you are chock full of knowledge and wisdom, and I'll chime in here too. So let's just kind of jump in. As a quick overview, you know, we kind of talked about why a corporate executive would hire a financial planner. We talked about the different compensation plans that they have. A lot of it, really what it dives down to, is having a lot of equity or shares in your company. And so again, we talked about the different programs and things like that. What we did promise to talk about is kind of diving into really how do you get to a point of strategies to maximize the plan, reduce, probably at some point eliminate exposure, maybe not eliminate, but certainly severely reduce it. We, of course, want to talk about the tax man, liquidity issues. And then I know, too, like, how can you maybe pair this as you're exiting the plans? How do you pair that with supporting your long-term planning for you, whoever you're supporting, whether it's loved ones? And then a lot, I know, of our clients tie it into their charitable giving and goals on that front. So we're going to have a lot packed in here for our listeners today. And so, Matt, what do you want to start with first?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that we spent a lot of time on last episode was talking specifically about the various parts of compensation for executives. And one of the things that we said we would talk about on this episode was the solutions to those. And I think the top number one solution or strategy to weed through some of these various compensation pieces is education.
Yes.
As you had mentioned on the last episode, each company has a different name for some of their different programs, and they come in various shapes and sizes. So the key for us is to figure out what it is that this program is doing, why, and explain that to our client who is the executive, so that first they have a good understanding of what this is, what it's doing, and then we can help them fit that into their plan and show you, hey, so you've got, for instance, these stock options. Here's how they work. Here's how they would affect your plan or can affect your plan. If the stock price doesn't go anywhere, this is what it would look like. Or if it goes up, this is what it would look like. Really helping the client understand what it is that they're getting, I think, is the first step and the most important step before we can dig into any of the other tax strategies, you know, diversification strategies that I know we wanted to discuss. So that is very important.
That's a really important piece, especially because our clients generally have access to, because some plans you can choose to opt into or opt in or out of. A lot of the plans, it is just that's a big part of their compensation. But not only educating them on the different parts of the plan, but again, then kind of how do you piece them all together? Because you could either decide certain years to do them or not, or certainly when you're on the liquidating side or exiting side, they're going to maybe have different time frames, different tax consequences.
Right. Additionally, it's hard to walk someone into a strategy if they don't understand what the problem is.
Yeah, so we
have to unpack the problem before we can help with a solution. And so the education piece is really the area that helps us do that. Hey, this is the problem that having this much in stock options presents, hopefully a good problem. Here's why we have this solution and why we would recommend going down that path.
And I think this is oftentimes, I know you've seen it, we've talked about this, is, you know, if you're dealing with a C-level exec, they're super busy people and they all look at this, you know, over break, or I'll look at this next year. Oh, I'm going to make a note. I'll talk to my accountant or my comp lawyer about this, or HR, right? And we all know life happens and everybody has good intentions. So oftentimes people may be surprised at how much value or equity they've actually accumulated in their company.
That's exactly right. And that really is where the strategies we're going to talk about come into play.
Perfect.
I know the first thing we wanted to dive into was the tax part of equity compensation. So in the last episode, I recall us talking about restricted stock, performance stock, and stock options. And one of the things that I find very interesting is that with restricted stock and performance stock in particular, companies have a minimum amount that you have to withhold for tax, and that is 22%.
Yes, this is a key thing. Let's focus in on this, listeners. Very important.
Yes, this I find whenever I start to work with someone in this space is always issue A number one.
Yep.
They'll come and say, I paid a ton, or my accountant came to me in April.
Yes.
And said, I had a huge tax bill. And the answer is almost always, they had restricted stock or performance stock that vested and they very, very much under withheld. If someone is in this realm, they're probably in a higher tax bracket. And so 22%, it's not going to cut it. It's insufficient. Before we can talk about any of the other tax strategies or do any sophisticated tax planning, making sure that we can at least get on the same page in terms of expectation around how these things are taxed. Restricted stock and performance stock are taxed at ordinary income when they vest, absent any other strategies that can present a large tax bill. And so you want to make sure that you're withholding enough when you have this sort of compensation. What that entails almost always is reaching out to their HR benefits team and requesting that additional withholding is taken place, ideally on the equity itself,
right,
when it vests. In some cases, that isn't available.
Right.
We recommend additional withholding on just regular salary income. So it is really, I know it's not some tax secret, but really it is the expectation piece that might make people feel better not getting a huge bill in April.
Yeah. And no one, I mean, I love surprises. I know everyone doesn't, but no one likes that surprise.
No. They don't. The second piece, I think, in terms of understanding, and we're just sort of talking lay of the land in terms of equity compensation, is understanding and laying out the different vesting periods that you might have with these different equity compensation pieces. Particularly if someone has performance stock, that can happen. That can be, hey, if you hit this target by this year, we're going to pay you X amount of shares. So in a given year, a person can get a very large amount of shares vesting, which
sure
would be a very large taxable event. Well, what we want to do is try to, as much as we can, spread out the other areas of income equity so that we're not taking a huge tax hit in 1 year and putting them in a higher tax bracket.
Right.
What we want to avoid, for instance, with these, for an executive that has restricted stock and performance stock and stock options, we're not going to exercise options in a year where they have a huge amount of RSUs and or restricted stock and performance stock vesting, because that would, again, put them in a very, very
exasperate
the issue. So we try to first lay out, when does this stuff all roll out? And how can we best plan around it to just spread it out? Again, there's other tax strategies. And I know that on your other podcast, you've talked about more general tax strategies, maxing out your 401k, retirement plans, charitable giving, things like that. But before you can even employ those, we want to try to spread income out as much as we can.
Well, I think the first thing, as you mentioned, is let's identify and do some projections, because we're going to get all the time of when were they awarded, when do they vest, when can you exercise if there are options. And so at least project, if it all happens, this is the baseline. And then I think then you go into what can we control? So what timing levers can we move to try and get it over different or multiple tax years? In the event that either, like you said, you have an executive, they did their job and the share price really skyrocketed during that 3-year long-term incentive plan. And so it's coming out. Do you maybe want to tie in? You can't move that, right? The employer determines when that pays out. So maybe you want to share some ideas. We always know that all our advice is tailored to each individual client, but some ideas that you've helped clients reduce that tax bill where you can't control the timing.
Yes. This is where working with a financial planner is very important.
It's key.
It is key.
This is our huge value add.
Yeah. We have to understand the full picture. We have to understand the goals. We have to understand the values. You know, not every single person is charitably inclined, but if one was, I know you had a great episode on donor advised funds, and I would highly recommend people listen if they haven't. But if one was charitably inclined, this is the exact situation where we would pull something like that in, where we would say, okay, Mrs. Smith, we know that you love X charity or giving to, you know, a number of charities. This would be a really great year to fund up that donor advised fund, because you've got this paying out and this paying out and this paying out. And we can, you know, reduce your tax bill significantly by employing that sort of strategy. The other thing that is important, you know, again, looking at the holistic piece, is working with your advisor on tax loss harvesting elsewhere in the portfolio. So if we know that there's going to be a large amount of capital gains from selling shares or something like that of company shares, you want to work with your financial planner to make sure that other areas of your portfolio are as tax neutral as they can be, or helpful in the way that you're creating losses to offset those gains. So again, it goes back to the holistic view of the person's finances to tailor that tax advice on reducing tax over time. The other thing that we talked about last episode was, again, spreading it out. So with deferred compensation, the idea of trying to push the payout over longer periods of time, that can reduce the amount of tax that you pay just by getting you in a lower bracket year by year, as opposed to a high bracket in 1 year.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. I think it is. It's just working, understanding the whole picture, and then working with the client's CPA or accountant to, again, say what other maybe strategies could we employ, or looking at the whole picture and just saying, oh, maybe this might be a great time to generate this loss, or looking at what if they're married, or if they're married, because then it'd be a joint return. Are there things you could do with the other spouse's or person's income as well? So you're working kind of in concert and not in a vacuum.
Yes. Additionally, a lot of times, particularly with C-suite executives, they might be invited to be on another board. Mm-hmm. So this is very common in corporate America, where if there was a CEO, a CFO, CIO, they might get invited to be a board member for another company, because companies like to have a diversity of opinions on their board. It makes their company better. So, you know, while you might be CEO of one company or, you know, CFO, you might sit on a board of, one company or another. If you're working with a financial planner and that person knows about that board income, you can also create additional retirement plans that can help you shelter some of that income. So again, it goes back to the holistic view being the most important piece of this, because you know, you could go to your HR or someone else and ask for advice, but if they don't know the whole picture, then it's very hard to tailor the solution.
Yeah. And one thing, and I think you may talk about this as we hit some of the other points, is when you're contributing or making donations to charitable organizations, you don't always just have to write a check. So assuming where you are on your equity holding obligations and things like that's another great way to kind of get the twofer on tax savings, where you can, you know, you've held some vested company stock, it's continued to appreciate, you've already met your holding obligation. Instead of writing a check, you would donate those shares, saving taxes on the avoiding paying capital gains and still getting the charitable deduction.
That's an excellent point. And that is another excellent way to reduce, again, like you said, twofer. Actually a threefer. You avoid capital gains.
Not that Matt and I are competitive at all.
You get the charitable deduction and you help diversify your portfolio, which I really wanted to talk about.
Oh my God, what a great segue. I'm telling you guys, he's going to be the number one guest star here with these great segues. So why don't we go right into that then?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the largest issues that we see in working with this group is the concentration in equity.
Right.
Ideally, you're with a company for some period of time and the company does very well. One will have accumulated a lot of shares in their company, which is, again, a great wealth builder. And I love that as an aspect of compensation. The issue becomes when that equity becomes a huge part of that person's net worth. And then all of a sudden, your retirement, your financial future is dependent on one company's stock price. I don't know about you, but that sounds a little scary to me.
Well, we won't name names, but I think in fact there was a movie made about the one. So and it bankrupted a very large accounting firm. So
yes.
And I mean, it's always great till it's not.
Exactly.
Right?
So, exactly. And just like we talked about in the last episode, certain things might be in a company's control, but other things are not.
Right.
What goes on in the macro economy? Probably not in that company's control. What goes on in a sector, not under a company's control. You know, when an executive or someone steps away and they've got a large position in their company or their ex company, the new management team might not be as great as the last.
Yeah.
And that becomes a risk. And so really what we try to talk about and do is, hey, we want you to have exposure to your company, but we don't want it to put your financial plan at risk.
Right.
It is very important to manage this while someone is still accumulating, because what we don't want to happen is for someone to not make any change, to accumulate all this company stock while they're working, to walk away and then say, okay, well, 60% of my net worth is in this company I used to work for. What now? And that's when nothing is in their control.
Right. I was just going to say, and they're no longer on, you know, the C-suite team, and they don't have their finger on the pulse. They can't, if I'm the CEO, I can't go next door to my CFO's office and be like, hey, how's this coming? I mean, right?
Right. So, that's exactly right. And so all of a sudden, you know, you put yourself in an area where there are some strategies to reduce that concentration risk. It becomes harder if it gets to that point. And so that's why the first thing that we would recommend is to manage this on an ongoing basis.
Correct. It's not a one and done by any stretch of the imagination.
That's correct. You have to do it over time. There's a couple of ways to do that. I think, you know, one of the things that we find is helpful is to liquidate some of the restricted stock as it vests.
Why don't you, for our listeners, maybe embellish a little bit about how that's helpful on the tax management side?
Yeah. So this is another twofer. One of the ways that's helpful is, you know, when restricted stock, we talked about this in the last episode, vests, meaning you're given 100 shares in a company was our example last episode.
Yep.
And a third vested over 3-year period. So one third every year. When the stock vests, you pay ordinary income on the stuff that's vested. Beyond that, if you hold the stock you would pay capital gains on any gain beyond that after it vests.
Yeah, after holding it for a year.
Yes. So what we would recommend is when you have stock that vests, sell some of it, because when you sell it right after it vests, there's not any, there's very, very unlikely to be much gain at all attached to it.
Yep.
So no additional
taxes,
no additional tax. And then you also help to keep your exposure down, to diversify. Why is diversification important? That is a risk reducing exercise. As you've talked about on previous episodes,
right?
Concentration in one company, not only do you have stock and market risk, but you have risk in a single company. And so this idea of, you know, tax reduction is important, but the diversification part of it is very important as well.
Hey, pardon the interruption. I know you are listening to Dollars and Cents, Creating Your Fulfilled Life with Nicole Romito, and we're happy you're here. If you have any questions, please head over to myprivatevista.com or the show notes to find out how to reach us. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, I agree. And that's it. That's kind of what we call low-hanging fruit. So it's easy to do. You can just do a cashless exercise. As you mentioned, you know, make sure you have your as much withholding as allowed, so you're not getting a tax surprise. Maybe then, do you want to talk about like the options? Because that is something where you have to choose to exercise it. It doesn't automatically vest as the RSUs do.
Yes. So there's a couple of different ways that options can be exercised. And first, just as a reminder from the last episode, options are where you have a right to purchase a company stock at a given price. And as long as the company's price trades above what your right is, what your option is, mm-hmm. your option price, then it's what's called in the money, meaning that you can sell at a profit. So in the last episode, we used the example of someone who got options at $10. And we said the company stock price was trading at $20. Well, when that vests, you don't pay any tax at the vesting. You pay tax when you exercise the option. And there's two ways to exercise. One is to actually exercise that option to buy it, and you actually get the stock at $10 and you hold the stock. The other is cashless exercise, where you are actually selling all of it, or, you know, selling a portion of it and taking the cash instead of the stock. You essentially have exercised that right and buy the shares at $10 and immediately sell it. That is another way, again, to make sure that you're not accumulating large amounts of your company stock, having this large amount of unrealized gain when you step away and retire. But again, you're taking some off the table as you go and reducing your exposure in the company as you go, and thus creating less of a tax burden later on.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. How do you, I know one thing you and I see that's pretty common as well is, you know, you generally you have options. They give you a 10-year time frame in during which you can exercise, because again, they're trying to keep you aligned with growing the stock price. They also want to allow time for the, you know, for it to actually be worth something to the executive. How do you counsel against, well, I'm just going to let it ride. I got 10 years, Matt. Why are you talking? It's year one. Why are you talking about me taking some chips off the table here?
That's a great question. Yes. So you're exactly right that typically with these options that we're talking about, you have 10 years to exercise them. At that, you know, at the end of the 10 years, they just exercise. And that's, you know, it is what it is at that point.
Right.
Ideally, if you've took no action, it's up. But, you know, we all know that things happen in the market and it's out of anyone's control.
Yes.
So I'm sure that the person that had company shares that were granted in 1998, invested in 2008, would have been very happy or unhappy, you know, not taking any action up until 2008. So that's just a good example of you never want to wait until the last minute, because the longer you go, the less and less things are in your control.
Right.
And so by taking some off the table every so often, you reduce your risk of having, you know, sort of a blow up at the end, like we're talking about. I said at the end of last episode, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. And that really is important when thinking about options, is sometimes it's better to take some off the table and put some, you know, put a couple of chips in your pocket.
Yes.
And take the profit than it is to risk the, well, it could go up, in the next 2 years.
Yeah, let it ride. Yeah.
What we like to do is to lay out all the different compensation, particularly equity components with our clients. And if things are going well and in years where there's not a lot of income coming from or stuff vesting from the other equity component,
sure,
that's when we'll look at, hey, now would be a good year to
exercise some of the options
and, you know, take some cash, put it into your diversified portfolio so that we're keeping your overall net worth in balance.
And that was a point I was going to make. So I'm glad you brought that up, is generally speaking, when we're working with clients to exercise options or sell some of the vested RSUs or company stock, it's not like you're going to just take it and put it in cash. Although these days, that's not such a bad thing, but you're going to generally reinvest it in your diversified portfolio. So it's not like you're going to take it from a growth asset and then put it in something that isn't growing at all. So that's the other thing I think we have to temper clients thinking about or educate them a little bit about, is it's still going to be growing. And instead of it all being tied to just one company, you're going to have the benefit of being invested across hundreds of different companies in different sectors, different parts of the world, different parts of their life cycle, if you will.
That's exactly right. The idea here over time is to diversify and make sure that one's net worth isn't overexposed.
Right.
You know, the other idea, and this just goes to company stock that an executive might hold, mm-hmm. that I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, is what's called a 10b5-1 plan. It's a 10b5-1 because that's the tax code name. As a lot of,
I thought you were going to talk like CB talk or something here.
I didn't make that up. That's a tax code name, is 10b5-1. We talked in the last episode about insider trading rules, mm-hmm. the fact that individuals that work at these companies have very limited opportunities to actually sell stock. And so one of the common ways to legally sell company stock over time while you're still an executive is to put one of these plans in place. And essentially what it is a way to designate in the future selling company shares at a given price or at a set time. And it has to be out in the future. So there's a window where no trading takes place. It's typically 2 months or more. And in that point, any information that person knew would be public to the market. And so I can put a 10b5-1 plan in place and say, 6 months from now, I want to sell 500 shares. Or if the price is $30 in 4 months, I'd like to sell 500 shares. And this is a way to, it's far enough in the future where insider trading can take place. This plan's in place to just automatically place those sales. Great way to reduce your company stock exposure while living in the guidelines of
the required disclosures, yes, exactly. And scrutiny, as you said, I think in the last one. Yes. So good. Is there anything else you wanted to add on that, like on the liquidity side? Or I know one thing I've had this conversation with clients as well, is, you know, you've mentioned with the deferred comp, there's different payout options. So you could do lump sum, or you could take a installment sale, which means it's going to pay out over a set period of time, 5-10 years. I know one of the things I've counseled clients on is, you know, you're no longer going to be, you know, having lunch with the CFO, or if you're the CFO with the CEO or whomever. And, you know, as we've talked about in a prior episode, you know, deferred comp is not protected like 401k plans are. They're actually a general asset, of the company, which is one of the reasons the IRS allows these plans to exist. So I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about, you got to balance the tax implications with how good are you going to feel about letting that money ride? Because each year you're farther out from being kind of in the know.
That's exactly right. There's definitely a delicate balance between letting a plan roll out forever and putting the plan at risk to the company's books, while also making sure that you're not taking a huge tax bill.
Correct.
The other thing I would watch out for, and I always recommend watching out for with these plans, is the word retirement. Sometimes when you designate to receive money at retirement, it technically might mean just when you leave the company, which might not actually be retirement. Mm-hmm. So if you were to leave your company, let's say you designated retirement as when you're going to take the payout, but you were just leaving the company to move to another company, it's possible that you receive a retirement payout at that point that you leave, in which case you'd probably be at a pretty high tax bracket. So
yeah, that's exactly a right. really
balancing
good point.
Those two things is very important.
I feel like that's what our attorney friends are like. I can neither confirm nor deny. We're always like, well, it's all about the balance. So,
well, and that's why working with a financial planner is very important, because right. we help people weed through those two things. And if we see all the other things that are going on in their financial life, we can help better implement a plan that strikes that balance.
Yeah. And just because you're on the same team, you know, if you're the CEO and you're on the team with the CIO, COO, CFO, et cetera, it doesn't mean that your financial plan, your timeline, your goals, what you're trying to do, what you're going to do next, those could be very different. Even though you're all in the same executive comp plan, and let's just say you're all getting the same level of executive comp, right?
Yes, yes. Everyone's different.
Yeah, everyone's unique.
Yes, so. And so that's why it's important to have someone who knows your situation.
Yeah, I agree. So I think with that, these were two excellent action-packed episodes. So thank you. Is there anything you either wanted to bring up that we didn't get a chance to cover, reiterate, or highlight?
Very briefly, I just wanted to mention, you know, to sort of put a bow on everything we talked about.
Sure.
The most important conversation we typically have with these clients as financial planners and talking about, you know, their private vista is what comes next really the long-term planning. As we mentioned at the top of the first episode, the folks that tend to occupy this space are busy and have a lot going on in life, and it's hard to go from 100 to zero. And so really talking through what comes next and having that conversation about what life can look like after stepping down from a position like that, and what sort of things are available to them, what financial resources they have to live a fruitful right. life. You know, I can't tell you how much that helps emotionally these folks. So we really try to put a focus on that. And, you know, the other piece that I know we touched on was charitable giving. So,
yes,
you know, charitable giving and long-term estate planning for their families, two other really important areas of focus for us when we're dealing with them.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, well, thank you again for sharing your time, which is all of our most valuable resource, and a little bit of your knowledge and wisdom experience. So thanks again for coming in.
Thank you.
And we're going to close out this episode in case for some reason our listeners only listen to this one, which I don't recommend at all, but time is limited for all of us. So Matt, this should be easy, but again, no time constraints, money constraints, need to be in Chicagoland constraints. Where would you most like to live and why?
Well, I love Chicago, but as I said in the last episode, I love the outdoors.
Yes.
So if I could be a place where I could ski and fish throughout the year, it would be Montana.
Perfect. Excellent.
You know, Nicole, it's good to know he didn't change his mind and he's still.
I know, right? Well, we had it down. So that would be one I could be like, rewind, Bill.
Oh, yeah. Wait a minute.
He's giving different answers.
You know, I've been in Montana, Matt. It's beautiful in Montana. I can certainly understand why that might be your private vista. Absolutely. It's an interesting conversation because, you know, Nicole, a long time ago, somebody once said to me an old saying, it's not just what you make, it's what you keep.
And oh, that's so true.
And this episode number two focused a lot on just exactly that. So thank you. For people who are listening and they're thinking, maybe I should have a conversation with Nicole or Matt, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Yeah, there's two ways. I would say first, you could reach out through our website at myprivatevista.com. We have a contact us button on the homepage. You can fill out your information there. Please reference this episode. If you have a preference, you want to talk to Matt or myself, just put that in there and we'll be sure to get back to you. You can also call at 312-831-4370 and our receptionist will be able to get you in contact with either of us.
Excellent. Thank you, Nicole. And for those of you who are listening who are not subscribers, the thing that you can do next is really easy. Hit subscribe. When you subscribe, you are notified automatically when Nicole drops a new episode of Dollars and Cents. And if you have not listened to episode one, I'm just reminding you, go back and listen to episode one. This is a good two-part series and worth your time to take and listen to. Thank you so much for listening today. On behalf of Nicole and everybody at Private Vista, I'm Bill Tucker, reminding you that today you can go out and make it a great day or not. It is your choice. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.
Thank you for listening to the Dollars and Cents, Creating Your Fulfilled Life with Nicole Romito, sponsored by Private Vista. Visit our website at www.myprivatevista.com or give us a call at 312-831-4370. And don't forget to click the follow button to be notified when new episodes become available. Private Vista is a group comprised of investment professionals registered with Hightower Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Advisory services are offered through Hightower Advisors, LLC. This is not an offer to buy or sell securities. No investment process is free of risk, and there is no guarantee that the investment process or the investment opportunities referenced herein will be profitable. Past performance is neither indicative nor a guarantee of future results. The investment opportunities referenced herein may not be suitable for all investors. All data or other information referenced herein is from sources believed to be reliable. Any opinions, news, research, analyses, prices, or other data or information contained in this presentation is provided as general market commentary and does not constitute investment advice. Private Vista and Hightower Advisors, LLC, or any of its affiliates make no representations or warranties expressed or implied as to the accuracy or completeness of the information or for statements or errors or omissions, or results obtained from the use of this information. Private Vista and Hightower Advisors, LLC assume no liability for action made or taken in reliance on or relating in any way to this information. The information is provided as of the date referenced. Such data and other information are subject to changes without notice. This was created for informational purposes only. The opinions expressed herein are solely those of the authors and do not represent those of Hightower Advisors, LLC, or any of its affiliates.